Good morning and fasten your seatbelts. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. We are going to be talking about the latest, some controversial, some not, reads, also old favorites, quick picks from the Columbus Library. I am delighted that Cassie Rose is here. Cassie is WOSU's book critic, and her blog, which is indispensable for anyone who loves books, is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and Robin comes and brings us the latest quick picks from the library. And Nick White is professor of English creative writing at The Ohio State University. He is a published author with two hits, as far as I know, two so far, to his credit. And he is here as well. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody, and Nick White.
Oh, thank you.
Lovely to have you with us. Cassie Rose, you sent me an email last week and recommended that we try to get a local author on the program, and he's coming. We're working on that. His name is Moriel Rothman Zetcher. He lives in Yellow Springs, mm-hmm. has an incredible yes. background, and you shared with me his novel, Sadness is a White Bird, which I have since read. So let's talk about Sadness is a White Bird, a brand new novel by a locally based writer.
It's a phenomenal story in and of itself. I think that also that's a kind of a book, when you read it, it sensitizes you to the headlines. Specifically for this book, in terms of the historic Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It is not preachy in any way about that, but I came away from the book realizing that here I have always just been skimming over the headlines in the newspapers, and now having read this book, and just in the past couple of weeks, there was some airstrikes that were going on in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and I read all of the articles because this book took me into the lives of, and again, it's fiction, the lives of a 16-year-old or 17-year-old Jonathan, green-eyed boy from Pennsylvania, who returns to Israel with his family, and he becomes friends with twins, Nimreen and Laith, who are Palestinians, college students, and they become friends because their mothers are friends. And they spend Friday nights together. They talk about poetry. They take day trips together. But always in their discussions is their loyalties and their background. And so we are drawn into this divide between them that historically divides them, whereas yet they have great love for one another.
The three of them have great love for one another. It's a love story in a way, I thought.
Yes, it is. And he does it very well. It's very subtle and it is very moving. That because the twins, they're fraternal twins, Nimreen and Laith, and Jonathan. Jonathan is smitten with Nimreen, but he also, the book is written to Laith.
The young man, right?
The young man, yes, because of what has happened, which we don't want to give away. But what is, for them, what is a big discussion is that Jonathan is finishing high school, and as a Jewish 18-year-old, he is faced with the draft. Mm-hmm. And so now he is going into the IDF, which is the Israeli Defense Force, to guard the Palestinian territories. So he mm-hmm. is hugely conflicted because of his love for Nimreen and for Laith and his bond of friendship with them. And here he is having to face all the protests by the Palestinians, and there is a major confrontation that pretty much wrecks his heart.
There is a scene in this novel where the three of them are hitchhiking and they are picked up by a young couple, and everything is fine and they're being driven, and it becomes clear that two of the people in the backseat are Palestinians, and the car ride gets very, very strange and sad quickly.
It does. And there's a tension there that draws you into the story. But again, it makes you realize actually what is going on. In real life. And the author, Rothman Zetcher, he has an interesting background. I mean, I believe that he was born in Jerusalem and then came to the United States and went back. And he was, I think, faced with the draft, or he went into some resistance there.
Well, and he's living back in here now. I think his parents were academics, maybe. I'm not sure if they were teaching at Antioch, but he is now living in the Yellow Springs area with his wife and his daughter. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, I he's somebody I want to know more. I want to he made me I put this book down. I finished it and said, what else has he written? And I think it's his first published novel.
So it is.
I'm sure there's more coming, but I'm going to be in touch with him to see what else there is that we can get our hands on quickly. And again, he has expressed some interest in joining us, and I hope that he will someday. But the title of the novel is Sadness is a White Bird by Moriel Rothman Zecker, and he was here recently. You saw him at
He was. That's he came to the Prologue Bookshop and did a reading there. And when I knew that he was coming, that's when I read the book so that I would have read it before I went to his reading. I highly recommend for anyone to go and hear him read from his book. He's very entertaining, very engaging, and afterwards also engaging in conversation. There was one woman who was very perplexed with the ending. I'm not going to go there, but having read the book, and you'll understand that. And she couldn't talk about it because she couldn't give it away, but she did afterwards go and share with them. And if you read the book, you will understand.
There's a couple of shots of him on YouTube giving readings, and that he is very engaging. But obviously, if you have a chance to go see him live, do it. And we'll look forward to having him join us today. And thank you very much. As I've always said, if Cassie Rose recommends a book, read the book. Thank you very much for that.
Sure.
Robin Nesbitt, you are here. You haven't been with us for a while because you're on vacation. So it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
You are here with Quick Picks from the Library. First of all, you're going to give us a quick rundown of what are Quick Picks.
So Quick Picks are bestsellers that we buy extra copies of. So if you've been waiting for something and you come into one of our locations, it could be there. And so it's like, wow, there was something I was waiting on. And it's right there. Checks out for 21 days. You can't renew them, but it's a great way to get your hands on something that you've been waiting for. I've seen people lately, you know, been waiting on Michelle Obama's Becoming. I'm like, hey, wait, I've got one right here. It just squeals of joy. So it's very exciting.
Caro working. That happened to me at Whetstone the other day.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
So what's the latest? What's the hottest quick pick you got for us now?
Well, the hottest quick pick is actually probably one of the Janet Ivanoviches.
God love her.
Yeah, right. the Big Kahuna. She's now writing not just by herself. She's writing with her, I think, Peter's her son. So now they're writing together. She's written with her daughter. She's written with her son. She's written with some other authors. She's sort of like James Patterson. She's like a whole, you know, factory farm going out there. So this comes out it's called The Big Kahuna. It came out on May. I think this is a part of a series, the Nick Fox and Kate O'Hara series. I love the first line of the description. A stoner, an Instagram model, a Czech oligarch, and a missing unicorn. What more do you need?
Wow, that's
right?
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to hand it to her.
Yeah. So this is already out, you know, over 400 holds on it. She's a big, she's a big author. She's funny, so that's why people like her. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, the news is depressing and, you know, sometimes the weather's depressing. And so Janet Ivanovich and authors like her just kind of help you escape and get away. And
escape is a good word in this context.
I was just going to say, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I have readers come in and kind of apologize for reading stuff like this. I'm like, don't apologize. You read what you want.
Enjoy it. Put your feet up.
Does she still do the one for the money, two for the dough?
She still does the
series.
Stephanie Plum
Oh, my
series.
God. I love Stephanie Plum.
Stephanie Plum. That's exactly right. Yeah. I do that with John Grisham. I just put my feet up and have a great time because he's a wonderful storyteller.
Exactly. Well, like I like to say, we do a lot of training with our staff, and we talk about the fact not everybody wants to go home every night and read War and Peace or The Scarlet Letter, you know, which are both fine pieces of work, and I'm not dinging either one of them. But every once in a while, you got to have a little bit of cotton candy to go with the broccoli.
Love me Dominic Dunn. Nick White. Speaking of cotton candy, you're not bringing us that because you do very, very you do very intense and sometimes controversial but well worth reading books. So what do you – and you were very excited about some titles.
Okay. So I think I'm bringing very, like, literary beach reads is the
theme. Excellent. What a great idea.
So all of these books, most of them, I think, have, like, a beach featured
in
them.
That's a T-shirt.
Right.
Literary beach reads.
Yes. And the first one I'm going to recommend is by John Glenn, G-L-Y-N-N, not our famed senator, a memoir called Out East, Memoir of a Montauk Summer. And this book is a memoir, and it is really interesting. I began reading it. It's about John Glenn's what happened to him a few years ago when he took out a share of a house in Montauk. He became a house guest. It's sort of a place where he would go during the weekends. He's a literary editor that lives in Manhattan. And while he is there on this beach interacting with these new people, affectionately called the Hive, that live in this sort of like communal beach house, he finds himself for the first time in his life falling in love with another man. Mm. Until then, he had only dated women. And this happens at a kind of, he mentions it in the book, at a kind of flexion point in his life where things are sort of like his emotional life is kind of like in a tailspin. His beloved maternal grandmother had just passed away. He had just survived a horrific car crash.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, very vulnerable. And the way he describes in the book his sort of lazy days on the beach are just wonderful. Like living in landlocked Ohio, I can't quite get to the beach, but reading about it is wonderful. But also, in addition to that, the way he is able to depict his vulnerability on the page and not be self-indulgent about it, but be sort of clear-eyed, be sort of that writer at the desk looking back and knowing some of the decisions he's making are probably not the best decisions, but still holding himself accountable and doing such a great, wonderful job of depicting this like burgeoning first love that is really kind of ephemeral. I just loved it. I read it almost in one sitting. This would be a great book for the summer.
Tell me the title. Remind us of the title and the author.
Out East by John Glynn.
John Glynn, G-L-Y-N-N.
Yes, and okay. It just came out this Tuesday.
And okay. It's a memoir. It's nonfiction.
Yes, it's a nonfiction memoir.
Was it convincing? Did it ring true?
It did ring true.
Okay.
He does also in addition to like his own personal story, he does a great job of describing the characters that that live in this house with him. He sort of goes in and out of different characters' perspectives because he is, when he first arrives there, kind of an outsider, the new person. And that sort of positions him perfectly to sort of size up the people and characterize them. So, yeah, it's a fun, good read.
The other book that you had there that I mentioned that I had gotten from the library and I returned it without reading it, and I guess I didn't get to it. It was called Cape May.
Cape May by Chip Cheek.
Somebody recommended that to me, and I didn't read it.
I think I did via email.
Okay.
This book is like a fever dream. So it takes place in late 1950s. Young Henry and Effie are high school sweethearts and get married. They're from Georgia, both of them very sexually inexperienced, and they decide to honeymoon in Cape May, New Jersey in September during the off season, not really understanding what that means. And so they go to this beach town.
Okay.
It means that
nobody's there.
Nobody's there.
Right,
and so they get there and it's sort of like a ghost town. Mm-hmm. And at first they are put off by this, and it affects the sort of enjoyment of their honeymoon, and they're deciding, all right, well, we're just going to, like, go back to Georgia. But before they go back, they see this house that they're passing because they're walking, and there's this party going on, and so they decide to go and check it out, and they become friends with this quasi-cosmopolitan couple, Clara and Max, and Max's younger sister, the mysterious and wry Alma. And this fivesome begins a kind of insular, close, some might call it toxic relationship with each other. And I won't give too much away, but some people in this coupledom begins affairs. There is perhaps a little bit of polyamory going on. It is a interesting read. Like, there are passages in here, Christopher Purdy, that are so steamy you need to wear a raincoat to read it.
I may be too old, but all right. Chip Cheek is the name, which has got to be a made-up name. Forget about it.
Yeah, no. Chip Cheek
is not
Cape
his real
May.
Name.
If you want, like, both of these books are wonderful companions to each other.
Okay.
Be great beach reads. Have a cocktail when you're reading it and just let, like, Calgon take you away.
And
like, it
is scandalize and impress your friends at the same time. On that note, we are going to take a break and come back shortly, please God, with more of today's All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away.
And WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, he said, wiping his brow. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm delighted to have Nick White here from the Faculty of Creative Writing and English at The Ohio State University. Nick is a published writer and a teacher here in Columbus and elsewhere. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. We'll be asking Cassie to update us on her blog later in the program. And Robert Nesbitt is here bringing us the latest quick picks from the Columbus Library. Robin is the manager of the still new and magnificent Hilliard branch of
beautiful
the Columbus Library.
Yep,
complete with covered over indoor swimming pool. Cassie Rose, I was sent a copy of a book called The Farmer's Son and was on the point of just throwing it out or giving it away. And you said off mic, do not give this book away. So talk to me.
It's called The Farmer's Son, Calving Season on a Family Farm by John Connell. It is a memoir by a young man who in his 20s, he was a film producer and a journalist, and he returned home to his family farm in County Longford, Ireland. He was intending to write, and in return for the shelter that his parents were giving him, that he would work on the farm. It is a compelling memoir and so well written in, and he does it in sections. So you feel like he is just stepping aside in the barn and writing at that moment. This is not John or Harriet of the, forget what that series was.
All Creatures Great and Small.
John
Harriet, yes.
This is
British.
Not, this is very real. I mean, the story opens with he is by himself and he is birthing a calf and there is some problems with it. What is so wonderful about this book is that he is, you can feel his love for the land, his love for the animals. He doesn't just see them as products, but it is a business. You also see the relentlessness of his work, that in the calving season, he is up at 2 a.m. He is up at 4 a.m. He is exhausted. He talks about the fights that he has with his father, that farmers all have, fathers and sons have these fights. And for him, it's this, though, coming back home, and I mean to the home of his soul. He realizes that this is where he belongs.
Where had he been that he went back home to?
He was in Australia. Okay. He also was in Canada. He also briefly mentions throughout that he suffered from a critical depression. And he doesn't go into that a lot because that's not what the book is about, but it is part of his returning to the land. This book became a number one bestseller in Ireland, and he did not intend to write this memoir. He was trying to write novels, and someone said to him, well, you should write about this. He said, well, who's going to want to read about a farmer in Ireland? Well, you'll want to read about this book. Mm. He brings you into the farm, his relationship with his father. He talks about his past. He talks about also, and this sounds maybe too dry, but it's not. He talks about the history of the cow. Because and how, especially because he's out there in the fields, and he talks about it through even Greek history. So you come away with this great love of that he, you feel his love for the land, why he is there. I got onto YouTube and listened to a lot of interviews with him, and he's got a great story. He's in terms of where he has come from and why he is back here on the farm. And this is not a mechanized farm, an industrialized farm. And he talks about what is going on in America with our farms. And
which are dying too. I mean, it's, I wonder,
the family farms are, yes.
Yeah, in Ireland, is it the same thing? Are they vanishing, the farms, or did you get a sense of desperation, or you know, we're hanging on here?
No, not at all. I mean, it's in a $1 million farm.
Okay.
And the amount
business.
Of it's a business, and the amount of work that they have to do, and the seriousness of when a calf gets an illness and dies is horrible for what is going on there, not only for the fact of their business, but also for them and all the work that they do to take care of the animals. But it is the contrast of the family farm in that food that comes to us versus the very highly mechanized farming that is going on in the United States. He does delve into that, not in great depth, but enough that it gives balance to understand the value of the family farm.
Well, I'm delighted that that book is still on my desk, and I'll take it home this weekend. The Farmer's Son by John Connell, which is a memoir of farming life in Ireland.
Yes, and I think it'll speak to your Irish background.
It will indeed, yes. Thank you for that. Robin Nesbitt, give us some more quick picks. We've had Janet Ivanovich, and there's a reason why she's been a bestseller for 40 years. She's great at what she does.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know. Still in line with kind of that fun read. I'll be the sunshine today.
Good, yes.
Sunset Beach by Mary Kay Andrews. She's another big author out there that people love. This one is interesting. The main character's name is Drew Campbell. She is out of a job. Doesn't seem to be getting any better. She's her strange father shows up. He's a flamboyant personal injury attorney and shows up at her mother's funeral after a 20-year absence. And worse, he's remarried Drew's 8th grade frenemy. So, Wendy, now his office manager. So, and they're offering her a job. So you can already see this is going to be fraught with peril. But again, you know, a fun read. Mary Kay Andrews has a lot of novels like this. I hate to use the term women's fiction, but that's what the publishing industry tends to call this stuff. But again, fun, you know, interesting stories, standalone. So this is actually kind of nice because I do have a lot of people that come in and read series, and sometimes I don't have the first book in a series. But an author like this, I can just hand them any one and they're good to go. So
they're still using women's fiction as a category in publishing circles.
I think, yeah, I still hear that term, which kind of irritates me.
What's
to
wrong
no
with
end.
Saying escape as a genre? I mean, what's wrong with that?
I don't know. I mean, for a while there was chick lit, you know, but it
well,
does.
That's terrible.
Yeah, there seems to be a problem in the publishing industry of using pejorative terms when it comes to women writing, and that really makes me cranky.
If anybody wants to read more about that, they should check out Meg Wolitzer's essay entitled "The Second Shelf."
Yeah,
it deals with that. It's a great, great read, and really will be eye opening. Yeah. I think
I've read that, and I was like, "You go, girl."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nick White, what else? Now, you want to talk about Karen Carpenter?
I do.
Okay,
I
just wanted to say that you're talking about a book based on somebody, because I'm so old, I heard her live a lot with her brother and liked them very much. Mm. They were, in fact, I went with my parents like 45 years ago to see them with the Boston Pop. What nice young people. Oh, and so talented.
Well,
and they were. They were very talented.
Well, you know, I have my own history with Karen Carpenter, too. My mom is a huge fan. They played the song "We've Only Just Begun" at their wedding, and so
that's how young you are. Yeah, my God, I think I had the record of that when it came out. What, in 1967?
Well, this book is called "Why Karen Carpenter Matters" by the great pop culture critic and professor at University of Southern California, Karen Tongson. And if the name doesn't, her first name is Karen, right? And what it is part biography of Karen Carpenter, but also a cultural study of Karen Carpenter and what she has meant since her death in American culture, but also what she means in the Philippines as well, which is where Karen Tongson is originally from. She left there, I think, when she was 5 years old. She comes from a family of musicians in the Philippines. Her mother was a singer, and her voice was often compared to Karen Carpenter's. Her mother was such a huge fan of Karen Carpenter that she named her daughter Karen Tongson, Karen, after her. And so she has this wonderful line that Karen Carpenter is both my privilege and my burden. And so she's always featured in Tongson's life. And the way she is able to weave sort of biography, cultural study, and personal essay together, it just becomes quite moving. It's just a snapshot of the world and a particular sort of like moment and person, sort of all these sort of intersections coming together. And also just, I mean, Karen Tongson is one of the smartest scholars I've ever read. And I listen to her a lot. She's on this podcast called Pop Rocket, which sadly is ending in a couple weeks. But she is one of the smartest people I've ever listened to, ever read, and it is just a privilege and a wonderful sort of experience to have someone that smart talk about for a few hundred pages something they dearly love.
Karen Carpenter died probably 35 years ago, and she died young, tragically, of anorexia nervosa. What does she mean today? What is the point? I mean, to me, she's a 35-year-old icon. But what's the question? What are the answers maybe in this
book?
Well,
I'm only two chapters in, so. But I will say that one of the things that Tongzin does in this book is she talks about Karen Carpenter and this idea of them being sort of because they came up during like the Nixon administration, you know, they were sort of like the antithesis to the counterculture movement, sort
right.
of milquetoasty.
That's what my parents loved them, right?
Well, since her death, though, they've taken on a kind of camp factor, and also they've become sort of great. To a certain extent, not her brother, but Karen Carpenter is very much to a certain group of queer folk, like a queer icon to a certain extent.
Really?
Yes, yes, yes.
Even to people who never, I mean, you're too young, to be honest with you. You didn't see her, did I mean, so
no.
Even now, she's really, I didn't realize that. Oh, well, okay.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
about her makes her that? Her early deaths?
Maybe yeah. that's a part of it. Maybe it is certain vein of earnestness in her song
yeah.
in her songs,
yeah.
you know. There's also she has that voice that
what,
we
wonderful.
Don't really hear that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just pure and beautiful and sort of innocent, and
yeah.
and it's unironic innocence. And I think that. That is something that I guess we just don't really get that much anymore. I'm trying to think of a comparable vocalist.
It's very direct
now.
And very honest. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I understand what you mean when you say it that way. That's a book I'll check out because I have wonderful memories of her.
It's not out yet. It comes out in early June. I want to say June 1st. And it's with the University of Texas at Austin Press, which has been putting out these wonderful books on music for a while now. They also are the ones who put out Go Ahead in the Rain by Hanif Abdurraqib, which I recommended last time I was here.
And he's been on the
and
show. He's
that
terrific.
Was a New York Times bestseller.
Yes,
so this press is really doing an amazing job with their selections.
We will make note of that, and you'll come back later after you've read it and tell us about it, okay?
I will.
Okay,
I will.
Very good. We have a call from Gemma in Columbus. I should give the number. Thank you, Gemma, for calling. 614-292-8513 if you'd like to call and get in the conversation about books today. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Hello, Jenna. Gemma, thank you for calling.
You're welcome. I wanted to tell you about probably the most underrated and most influential author of historical fiction. Her name's Dorothy Dunnett.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a six-series saga. Random House, Penguin Random House is reissuing her books. And Audible is also issuing a series of Audible versions of the book, and it's about the 10 years between when Henry VIII dies and Elizabeth the First comes into, and it's about a Scottish nobleman who is influential in Scotland and England and Russia and the Ottoman Empire during those 10 years.
This is Dorothy Dunnett. Yes, I recall she was very popular for a long time, and I'm glad to hear from you. She's coming back. If you want a really absorbing series of sort of historical fiction that's also very entertaining, she is the way to go. Gemma, thank you very much for that recommendation. I appreciate your call. If you'd like to call in with more recommendations, 614-292-8513. I was glad to hear Dorothy Dunnett's name again because there's more to life than, I don't mean to sound bad, than Game of Thrones. We all love Game of Thrones. I'm just saying that there was more historical fiction aside from that. Cassie Rose, let's talk about Game of Thrones, shall we? No.
You're right.
I'm just
probably
starting to watch
one
it,
of
by
the
way.
Men. I have not watched it.
I'm just starting, and I understand the appeal. I'm getting hooked. Yes.
Oh,
go
yeah?
go ahead.
I think I'm going to recommend a very fun book, a book that came out a long time ago, and it came into my hands because I went to the library to pick up a book that I wanted to look at. It's a book that, and I'll mention that too, because Nick, you and I briefly talked about it, The Unpassing. I went to pick up The Unpassing by Chinchia, I can't pronounce her name, Lynn. Anyway, so, and while I was standing there, because this book, The Unpassing, just came out, I think, last week, I thought, I remembered when I was a kid that I didn't go to the library to get a specific book. I would go to the library to get a book to read. And I thought, I'm going to wander through the stacks and find a book to read. So I picked up The Summer Without Men by Siri Hustvedt and I just love this book. And it came to me at a perfect time because so many of the books I had been reading that were newly out were very heavy and unfortunately kind of depressing. And I thought, I just need something light. Well, this I loved and I couldn't put it down. And it's a common story. A woman's, you know, she's in her late 50s and her 60-something husband comes to her and says he wants an air quotes a pause because he's a neuroscientist and he's now in a fling with his 40-year-old neuroscientist, whatever. So the voice of this woman who's writing about this, and she calls the girlfriend the pause.
The pause.
So she has a neurotic break. So she's in the hospital for a little while because of this that has happened. And then she's a poetry professor at Columbia and she takes a sabbatical and for a summer goes to a prairie town in Minnesota. She teaches a poetry class. So then you have this young group of teenagers that is part of the story. She's also living down the street from her mother, her 80-something mother, in the assisted living facility. So then we have all of these women in the assisted living facility. And next door is a woman with a toddler and a baby. So you really have the journey of a woman's life here. Mm. The women in the assisted living facility are unforgettable. One woman who does the typical crocheting of everything and the pretty stuff. But if you turn it upside down and unzip it, you know, there are devils, there are she-wolves. There's commentary on life as she really sees it.
And that, she'll take it, she'll strangle you. With
yeah, right. Yeah. It's that kind of humor. And also there is dealing with the girls that she's trying to teach poetry to. There's some bullying and how she turns it around and makes each of them write from the viewpoint of the other girl a poem or a story.
God, I got to get this book.
It is. Yeah, me too. Really fun to read. The voice, her viewpoint, it is upbeat, even while she wants to, you know, strangle her husband. And
I hope she does. I mean,
it isn't how she deals with it. And at the same time, she has someone named, she calls Mr. Nobody, sending her emails. And she has no idea who this person is. It's also very profound in some places, too, because she's a poet. She's very philosophically inclined. So she writes a little bit about life. And that's, I think, where all of these pieces of the journey of life fit in, too. Teenage girls, 80-year-old women, and then the pause.
And it's the pause. It's called The Summer Without Men.
The Summer Without
and
Men.
And the author's name is an odd name, but it's familiar to me.
Yes, it's Siri Hustvedt. She's married to Paul Auster, the author.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay. Wow.
Yes. And she has written several good novels. And I, as I said, I think came out probably 10 years ago. I was going through the library and I just thought, I'm going to pick it up and read
it. That's a lot better than anything Paul Auster has ever written.
That pillow talk would be wild, the two of them. We'll be right back. We have to take one more break. Don't go away for more of All Sides Weekend Books. We are back with the final segment of today's All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Nick White, with Cassie Rose, and with Robin Nesbitt from the Columbus Library. We have a call from John, who's been waiting patiently. Hi, John. Go ahead.
I wind up listening to a lot of books as I go about my job, and I just want to give a shout-out to audiobooks.
Yeah.
And there was one I read recently that was very enjoyable, and whoever read it should get a lot of kudos. It was called Nine Perfect Strangers. It's just a fun read. even though there's some heavy stuff happens. But she did a lot of voices and really added a lot to the experience.
Terrific, John. Thank you very much. I'm glad to have a shout-out for audiobooks because I know they're very popular with people. I think Nine Perfect Strangers is Leanne Moriarty's book about the group of people who are kept prisoner in the health resort.
Yep.
And yeah.
Not really prisoner, but yeah, there's some weird stuff going
was that
on.
Made into
yeah.
a movie?
Not yet.
Not yet, but it reads
yeah.
like it
yeah,
was.
Yeah.
But it was a wonderful read.
Yes,
so
it was.
Glad.
I read that,
Her
too.
Stuff is very good, Leanne Moriarty, as well.
I just listened to Hunger by Roxane Gay, and she reads it. Oh, my God. What a powerful book. And so there is something to be said for you know, listening to things as opposed to reading them. So,
how about some more quick picks from Robin Nesbitt at the Columbus
so,
Library?
So thinking about our first caller who talked about Dorothy Dunnett, we have a quick pick by a popular historical fiction writer right now, Jennifer Chiaverini, which I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right. She wrote Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. And her new book is set around World War II. And it's based on a true story inspired by actual events called, and the title, I'm sorry, is Resistance Women. These are women who tried to fight a battle against Hitler and Nazi Berlin. So Chiaverini has several historical fiction novels. There seems to be no end to World War II books right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So, but there is we did have another one that just came out this week that's based on World War I, and this one's called A Bend in the Stars by Rachel Barenbaum. This one, as we say, is for fans for All the Light We Cannot See, Women in the Castle.
Yeah.
So this one is also, this is World War I era Russia, about an ambitious young doctor and her scientist brother who are in a race against Einstein. So that should be kind of an interesting read, too. So if you're a historical fiction fan, we also have good quick picks for you, too. So the new one, Resistance Women by Jennifer Chiaverini, A Bend in the Stars by Rachel Barenbaum.
Resistance Women is a novel, is it?
Correct.
That right?
They're both novels.
They're
yep.
both novels. Now,
both novels.
What happens first thing Tuesday morning in the library?
Well, hopefully you bust in the doors and come find the ones that are out that day. So, yeah, Tuesday mornings are when publishers release new titles, and so that's when we have the quick picks. So if we say, like, The Bend in the Stars just came out this week, May 14th, and so there it was Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock when I walked out on the floor. So
you need to beat the doors down at 9,
right,
8:59, 8:30,
exactly.
And get yourself in the door of your branch library.
Exactly.
And you're at the Hilliard branch of the Columbus.
I'm at the Hilliard branch.
Metropolitan
yep.
Library. Go see Robin Nesbitt if you're in Hilliard and you want the best quick pick. She'll put you at the head of the list. I said she would, so she will. Anyway, Nick White, what do you have for us?
All right, I'm going to sneak in two books real quick if I can.
Okay.
The first one by Christopher Castellani called Leading Men. It is a book about – it's a fictionalized book of the real relationship between Frank Merlo and Tennessee Williams. It spans decades from 1940s all the way up to present day, including people who were friends with them. It also includes a mysterious lost Tennessee Williams play. There's a séance. There's wonderful sort of intense, funny conversations between Tennessee Williams and Truman Capote on the beaches of Italy. I mean, what more could you want from a book? This is a great, great book. Again, all my books, I'm sort of like, I want to come here with like cocktail recipes because all of these books I've recommended would go great with some drinks.
Literary beach read, you call
yes,
them.
Yes, yes, yes. And then the final one I want to recommend real quickly is, because I'm from Mississippi, I want to rep some good Mississippi writers, and this one is one of the best. Mary Miller, The Great and Good. She is coming out with this new novel. I think it comes out in late May, called Biloxi. It is about an older gentleman in his 50s who is recently divorced, retired, going through late middle life crisis, and decides to take a dog. And he takes this sort of sickly mutt. And this is not one of those dog books, like A Dog's Purpose, Marley and Me.
Does a dog die? I can't do that.
I'm not giving anything away.
But
I will say this. This book is so wonderful. Mary Miller works a particular type of magic with this book where this guy is not someone I would want to hang out with on a regular basis, mainly because he reminds me too much of some of the men in my family. Mm. And so, but with her writing and the story that she tells, she is so empathetic to him, so empathetic to this relationship between this man and his dog. And I know this is sort of like a book you think you've read before, but you haven't read it by Mary Miller. And I would strongly recommend you check this one out. It comes out in late May. The title is Biloxi, which is also a beach city, but, you know, the Gulf Coast in Mississippi.
It sounds like the classic My Dog Tulip. Do you know that?
No, I haven't read that.
Yeah, that's...
Who wrote My Dog Tulip?
I don't know, but I remember that, and I think the New York Review of Book Classics has it out, and that's how I got to see it.
But I actually think you would really love this, Cassie.
Yeah, it's, you know, My Dog Tulip's about a man, and it's his dog Tulip, but it's in London, and it's his relationship, and it's, you know, a lot of people love it, a lot of people don't, because, well, he gets into a lot of detail about the dog.
Yeah, it does with this too. Well, if you know, the book that just recently won the National Book Book Award was Sigrid Nunez's The Friend,
yes.
And it was all about, like, an academic who...
gets a Great Dane.
Inherits a right. Great Dane. Mm-hmm. And I think there is, like, there's this whole genre of books, like, when you begin to take care of something, mm-hmm. an animal, it does change you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It can't not.
Yeah. And she gets the Great Dane. She's, I think, in a studio apartment.
Yeah. And she hides the Great Dane.
And she has to hide it because it's rent controlled.
Right.
And it comes from her former mentor and once lover and who was married. And you get all that story. But she has this Great Dane that she falls in love with.
He cheats on his wife to walk the dog. What? Never mind. Anyway, Nick, what I wanted to ask you're OSU faculty. I wanted to ask you. I'm sure there are parts of the canon that you have to teach, but other than that, how do you choose the books you give your students?
Well, I'm teaching a novel forms class in the fall, and the way I arranged that sort of list of novels to read is that we're looking at the novel and how it is structurally created. And so I want a range of different novels that are structured differently. So we start very, very sort of basic with a novel that has a very traditional structure, Shirley Jackson's We've Always Lived at the Castle, which is a very traditional arc, right? And then we begin to complicate that with books like by Zora Neale Hurston, Their Eyes Were Watching God, or Edward P. Jones's The Known World, where you begin to start taking the traditional narrative. And when I think of Their Eyes Were Watching God, I think of that wonderful moment when the hurricane is passing through and they're looking up at the hurricane, and it's like their eyes were what, that's where the title comes from. But like that novel is told, that structure is almost like in a spiral, like a hurricane. The book like The Known World by Edward P. Jones, where he incorporates both flashbacks and flash forwards within the book. And a book like The Mezzanine by Nicholson Baker. Have any of you ever read that book?
I read that one.
It is a book that takes place in the span of one man's 10-minute ride up an escalator from the floor to the top of the mezzanine. And it's a wonderful sort of meditation on how far you can really push a novel and that structure. Anyway, so that's what I'm thinking. It depends on the class, too.
Right.
It really depends.
Just something I've always wondered.
When I teach workshops, I really want to focus it on student work.
Right.
And then writing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. We have a call from Peter in Columbus. Peter has a recommendation. Hello, Peter.
Yes. I have a subscription to Science Magazine, and they review books. I came across something last night that just sort of moved me. It's the title of the book is The Mountain That Ate Men, and it's about silver mining in Bolivia. Children start at the age of 10, and they're short, so they can work in these tunnels. They breathe arsenic dust. None of them live to be beyond 30 years old or 35 at the most. And it's very tragic. They work for $2 a day.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But I haven't read it, but I just wanted to toss it out to you. It's a new book, and the title is The Mountain That Ate Men.
Thank you, Peter, very much for that recommendation and your call. I appreciate that. Michael in Columbus is recommending something we've talked about before. Hello, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to – I haven't finished it, but I started to read it, Infinite Jest. And I wanted to. I was struck by how funny it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you reading all the footnotes?
I'm reading it on a.
Come on.
I'm reading it on a tablet.
Okay. Because I mean, the footnotes are the point of the book, and they do go on. And they're, that's infinite. David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest is a book that has a lot of adherents, a lot of fans of that book. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much for the recommendation. We got to go because we're running out of time. I want to make sure Cassie Rose has another chance to give us a recommendation, too.
A quick one?
Yeah.
A Line Made by Walking by Sarah Baume, B-A-U-M-E. I found this because of the Dublin Literary Awards. It was on the long list. It's another Irish book. An art student. She's in her 20s and she graduates. She works in the gallery and then she really gets confused and doesn't know what she's doing and sort of has a little bit of a psychotic break and goes to live with her in her grandmother's cottage. And it's this is really a mesmerizing book, and there is nothing I think that I can say about it that's going to sound mesmerizing. But if you Google it, you're going to see that Goodreads gives it 4 stars. It's because of her relationship with nature out in this – she's not really in the wilderness. They can't sell the house because there's a wind turbine next to it. And she has a relationship – she gets to know the neighbor, and you get to know her mother too. But she is just getting up every day and having these simple days, and I think – ultimately, when you come to the end of the book, you realize that her struggle has been that here she is this artist and she realizes she's not going to be a great artist. She's ordinary. Mm. And that's okay. Mm. She throughout the book, she does mention these installation works, famous works by other artists, which are really fascinating. And the way that the author builds the book, that's how you get to it with her. You begin to see that, I mean, the girl's in her 20s, and she begins to see that ordinary is okay. And that all in this world that we live in, where everybody is supposed to be famous and, you know, social media and out there and their name known, and here she is, an artist, and she is working on a piece of photography during this book. You really fall in love with her and who she is and what she's doing and what she's struggling with. It's very, it's close reading.
How did this book come your way?
I was studying the long list on the Dublin Literary Awards, and which is a very long list, but now they're down to the short list. Unfortunately, this didn't make it onto the short list. But when that Dublin Literary Award comes out, I look at those books because it's one of my favorite awards. Nice. Because all the nominees come from worldwide librarians. Oh. The stipulation is that the book has to be either written in English or translated into English. And I find some extraordinary books like this one that otherwise just did not hit my radar screen. Mm. So I highly recommend that people look at that list. Also look at the short list, which you're going to see some books there that are familiar, like Lincoln and the Bardo on that list. But there are a couple other on that short list that are pretty fascinating. And the long list, it's just where you get them from other nationalities.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Cassie, that you often speak out and you're out in the community speaking at bookstores and things. Anything coming up that we should know about?
Yes, there is a book coming up that is getting a lot of press, and here it is. I've got it's called...
Oh my gosh, this is the one I'm stealing from Cassie Rose.
He wants to take it out of my... Yes. It's coming out next month. It's called On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, and it's a letter from a Vietnamese son to his mother. And I am partway through it, but as I said, it's getting a lot of buzz, a lot of attention.
He started out as a poet, Ocean Vuong.
Yes,
beautiful poet. I think he even had a poem entitled On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
Yeah. This is his first novel.
Yeah.
Was it a translation or was it written in English?
I think it was written in English.
No, it was written in English.
Yes. So you're going to see a lot of buzz about
and
that.
And will you be speaking anywhere in the community? Will you be at a bookstore? Or you just were someplace, weren't you?
Yes, I don't have anything on the books right now.
Okay, well, if you're lucky, call Cassie Rose. She'll come and talk to your books, if you pay her a lot of money and buy her dinner. Anyway.
Hey, I'll do that too.
She's worth it. This is All Sides Weekend Books, and I've had a wonderful time today, and I hope all of you have too. And I try to scratch and write down furiously all the titles that the guests come in with. So in the 1 minute left, I'm going to let you each name one title and author you talked about that you really want people to remember.
I think I'd like you to remember A Bend in the Stars by Rachel Barenbaum.
Okay. Nick White?
Karen Tongson's Why Karen Carpenter Matters. Get it. Pre-order it today on IndieBound or Amazon.
Thank you. Cassie Rose?
I think it's Sadness is a White Bird.
by our neighbor, Muriel Rothman-Zecker, who I hope will be on the show someday soon. Well, Nick White, thank you. Have a restful summer, I guess. I'm sure you're writing and off touring and doing everything else.
I'll be doing a little teaching.
Faculty on The Ohio State University. Robin Nesbitt is the director of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. Always great with QuickBooks and everything literal. And Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And I have our producer, Kyle, laughing. So that is my cue to say thank you for joining us. I'm Christopher Purdy. Have a great afternoon.